From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We are halfway through the year and taking a listen back to some of the most memorable conversations. Since 1962, Taylor's Market in Sacramento's Land Park neighborhood has prided itself on being more than a grocery store, and a crucial piece involves the Johnson family. Danny Johnson was hired as a butcher nearly 40 years ago. In that time, he and his wife Kathy, and eventually their two daughters, made Taylor's Market a bigger part of their family, becoming owners. And they remain steadfast to creating a unique food experience through community. Earlier this year, the market announced the passing of Kathy Johnson. She was 58 years old. But Kathy's family also shared the reason why. From mental health and alcohol addiction. They decided to make her struggle public to help others and to bring to light a disease they say is often stigmatized and misunderstood. I spoke with Kathy's husband, Danny Johnson, about what made her life so remarkable and how he hopes Kathy's story inspires others to seek and successfully get the treatment they need. I want to start off with a trip down memory lane because you've been on Insight before, and we learned at that time that you were hired as a butcher at Taylor's Market back in 1983 at 19 years old. But what we didn't know was that was the same year that you married Kathy and that you two go back even further to childhood. How did you two meet?
We both grew up in the same small town, Penryn, up by Loomis in the foothills. I would stay at my grandmother's, and it was like three houses from where she lived. And her friend would come over and bug me, so I would throw rocks at him to get him away from me. So that was when I was 6 years old and she was five. And we always kind of knew each other, but little did we know that basically 10 years later we would start dating.
And then get married. I can't even imagine when you reflect back on pretty much your entire lives being spent together. Why do you think a childhood of, you know, maybe some nuisances and throwing rocks and stuff led to friendship and really culminated into nearly 40 years of marriage that includes two daughters, Felicia and Lillian?
I don't know. We just always connected. When we got into high school, I was a sophomore when she was a freshman, and I remember her walking the halls, and I told a friend, I'm like, I'm probably going to date her. And he's like, no. And then it was just a couple years later, you know, we were always friends hanging out in the same social group. And it just evolved.
Do you think Kathy would tell the story the same way?
Pretty much, yeah. we were always in lockstep. It was always frustrating for our children because they would come to us for answers, and we could be in separate parts of wherever, and we would give the same answer. Mm. And the girls were always like, you guys are unbelievable.
Well, obviously, Taylor's Market is a big part of your family's life. It's well known in Sacramento. I've been many, many times. But how would you describe it to someone who's never set foot inside?
It's a neighborhood store like there used to be everywhere in this country. It's still a corner grocery store. We're small, but we just pack a lot in there, and we just service. Old-fashioned butcher shop, good produce. We have a bakery. We just like serving people, and we like food.
Lots of yummy stuff in there. You know, it's dangerous when I walk into Taylor's
Yes.
Market. Given that it's such a big piece of your family, what made it the kind of place that you wanted to stay for nearly 40 years?
We were engaged, and I landed there a month before we got married. And I was looking for a job as a butcher.
That must have been a relief.
For her, it was. I was like, oh, it'll work out. And when I walked in, it was like, this is the place I want this type of place I want to work. And I went home and told my dad, I found a place and I'm going to own it one day. And my dad was like, okay, cool it, hotshot. You know, being 19 years old and energetic. And so the opportunity came up 3 or 4 years later to become a partner. And then Kathy and I became sole owners in 2007.
Yep. And it became an even bigger part of your lives. I was reading the bio of one of your daughters, Felicia, who's the operations manager at Taylor's Market. And as she puts it, from sleeping behind the meat counter in a bassinet as an infant to working in the offices as an adult, what has been the most, on the one hand, rewarding, but also the challenging aspects of operating a business that is so deeply ingrained with your family?
The most rewarding is working with your family. The biggest challenge is working with your family.
That's a perfect way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's like a period too. You don't even need a comment.
Yeah, it's you have to have a time to disconnect and go, okay, we're not going to talk about the store. But most of our travels and stuff always revolved around either chasing genealogy or looking at food. I've drugged Kathy into butcher shops all around the world.
What are some of the favorite places that the two of you have traveled? Because travel is really, you both were bitten by the travel bug.
Yeah. Australia, New Zealand. We absolutely fell in love with Singapore and in anywhere in Europe.
Given that Kathy passed away in February, you know, we're talking to you because of the message that you and your family wrote on the Taylor's Market Facebook page. It was just so beautifully written. It was so moving. You could really visualize and feel who Kathy was, what got her up in the morning, what sparked her passions and her creativity. But you as a family also made the choice to be honest about why she passed away in a way that doesn't really get typically shared in public, which you also acknowledge in that message. What kind of conversations did you have as a family to make that decision to share Kathy's struggle with mental health and alcohol addiction?
Her and I had talked about this, and I had told her that she had the platform and the power to help people if she could get sober. And when she was sober, she was like, yeah, I think that's a great idea. When she was drinking, of course, she didn't want to let anybody know. There's a lot of stigma and shame attached to this disease. So I told her, I said, look, if this doesn't work out, because last year she told me, she goes, I think my bottom, every alcoholic talks about a bottom. And she goes, I believe my bottom very well could be death. And I was like, look, I don't want to hear that. And she's like, you can keep throwing money at this disease. We can keep doing rehabs. And she goes, I can't, I just don't think I can overcome it. It's way bigger than anything I've ever experienced. So I told her, I said, I will tell your story and you're going to have an impact. And you don't think you have an impact right now, but you do, and you will. And so as a family, we've always been honest and open. We always taught the girls to be open with us. Sometimes there's stuff that I don't want to hear them tell me, but that's all right. I'd rather them tell me. And so when we were writing, we wrote the obituary, and then at the very end of it, we added in that. And my cousin did most of the writing. And she read it out loud to me, and I sat there and I went, I can't do this. But again, I was, it was 3 or 4 days after Kathy's passing, and I was just like, I don't know if I can do this. And then I thought about it for about 30 seconds, looked at my youngest Lillian, and Luna looked at Felicia, and they both said, yeah, we can do it. And I'm like, okay, full speed ahead. And it's been a little empowering. It's also the outpouring from the community. People are like, wow. And it's we got to get rid of the stigma somehow. So if this just helps one person, then I consider it a success.
And I hope that we help with that, too, by you being here and taking the time. What I particularly love about the post that was written is that it's really a love letter to Kathy. I mean, yes, you include why she passed away, but you make sure that people know the enormous beauty that she had in her life and that she also knew that it was extraordinary. Is that complete picture often missing from the conversation when we're talking about mental health and addiction?
Yeah, a little bit, because people tend to define someone by maybe mental health or addiction. And we wanted to make sure that she wasn't defined by that. That just happened to be her cause of death. I was very fortunate. Kathy and I were very fortunate. We lived a fairy tale for 38 years. The last five, to be completely frank, it wasn't a fairy tale. It was a nightmare. But the previous years, we were together for 43 years, and 38 years were absolutely wonderful. And then when she really started going down the rabbit hole and losing her way, when there was times of clarity with her, I just cherished that because I'm like, okay, I got to make the most of what I have. And we would have these open and honest conversations. And we were always open with each other. And I said, this is killing you. I'm watching you die in front of me. And she would say, you're right. And she goes, I don't know why you stick around. And I'm like, because I take my wedding vows seriously and I'm not going to abandon you. So I told her, I said, I'm in it for how long it takes, whatever happens, I'm with you.
You mentioned the outpouring of support that you received from that post, because both of these conditions exist in countless families. But for those who don't live with this directly in their life, what do you hope they better understand?
That there is hope, that there are programs out there that are doing some really good work now that you can get the addict into. And then as on the other side of it, on my side of it, as I guess the caretaker, if you will,
there's
also programs that help. I became a member of Al-Anon 6 years ago, and it helped me keep my sanity. The biggest issue I had with Al-Anon was the anonymity part, because I think that's an old way of thinking. And I've been very vocal about that when I go to meetings. And I said, look, I don't believe in the anonymous part. I understand it. I understand why people would want to be anonymous. But I think in today's society, if we're going to help and truly help cure addiction issues, then we need to be out in the open.
If there's a loved one who's listening to this and they have someone that they deeply care about who is battling mental health and addiction, but perhaps at this time in their life, they're overcome with frustration and just overwhelming helplessness, what would you like them to take away and know?
Just know that first you got to take care of yourself. And with addiction, it's not about you, it's about them. But you kind of want to take it on yourself and go, I can fix this. And you can't. You know, you didn't cause it, you can't cure it, and you can't control it. So those are the three C's that I learned in Al-Anon. But there is help out there for both sides of this, for the addict and the family. I have yet to talk to anyone who doesn't know someone through, you know, the so-called 6 degrees of separation, who does not know someone that's in their world that has an issue like this.
Yeah, myself included. Yeah, I completely agree with you. How are you and your daughters doing?
We're doing pretty good. I mean, we have good days and bad days. All in all, the reality is, and I get asked that a lot, is personally, I've been grieving for 3 years because the last three have been pretty brutal. So there was a lot of time when I was by myself, even though she was present, but she wasn't present. Physically, she was present, but she wasn't mentally. So I've kind of been preparing myself, going, and I would tell the girls, I started 3 years ago telling them, I go, I'm going to come in and find your mom one day. This is, you know, it was just a game of chance, and her body just couldn't handle it anymore. Her body just gave out. So all in all, not too bad. Yeah, I do I miss alcoholic Kathy? No, I don't. Do I miss the love of my life? Yes, I do.
Grief is such a individual trying journey. It can be obviously comforting when shared with others, but there are always moments, sometimes more than we would like, when we're faced with it alone. Given that Kathy was a love of your life, you two have shared the majority of your lives together, have you begun to kind of take in and reflect on all that you shared and also succeeded in as a pair?
Yeah, I mean, I walk in my house and everything has her touch on it. Everything that we have has a story. When we got married, we didn't have anything. I said this when I did her eulogy, that we, at our wedding, we had a money dance because we were just trying to raise funds because we were so broke. And it actually was wildly successful. But everything in our home has a story. And I was telling the girls, I said, we're going to have to go around and video everything so I can, they know some of the stories, but some of them they don't know. You know, whether it's books or art or rugs or just anything. Pretty much everything has been a collection of our lives.
How wonderful. I mean, the both of you are from the foothills, from the Loomis area in Placer County, but it's not too far of a drive to Sacramento, where you've spent a great deal of your lives. What did Kathy love most about Sacramento?
it's funny because she started down here before I did, and she wanted to buy an old Victorian downtown. And I'm like, no, that's a horrible idea. This is 1983. And I said, first of all, we don't have any money. Second of all, I don't want to live in downtown Sacramento. Well, here we are, and we have a Victorian in downtown Sacramento. We've been down here for 18 years. She just liked the fact that we could walk everywhere and go to a different restaurant or walk to the Crocker Art Museum. Downtown's so walkable. And we would go on these long walks. And when you're walking downtown, you see things that you don't see in a car. And I still go on walks every day, and I always see something different.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. You touched upon this, but you mentioned, you know, Kathy was really a pillar in the community, very active in the community, supportive of philanthropic efforts, also social issues as well. But I feel as though this post and the public conversations that you've been having since then have really expanded Kathy's reach to touch even more lives. Do you feel that way as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We had kind of had the conversation back in the fall that she has a relative who is a contemporary of Rembrandt, and we traced him back to the Rijksmuseum, and we have obtained some of his art. And
wow.
I said, you know, and she kept talking about, she goes, I just don't know if I can beat this thing. And I go, well, if you don't beat this and you pass on from this, you very well could end up more famous in your passing than when you were alive because of the message that we're going to put out. And she knew what the message was going to be. And she's like, so I might be like a famous artist and be better off. And I'm like, well, you could be. I said, we don't want that, but you very well could be. So that's kind of the analogy I use. It's kind of a weird analogy, but.
Where does that come from? Wanting to share, you know, sometimes the darkest parts of our lives to help others.
I just would not want anybody else to go through this. I wouldn't wish addiction issues on any person, and I would seriously wouldn't wish it on family members to have to watch it. Both sides of it are horrible. I had someone recently say, man, you really got it bad. And I go, no. I said, I'm still here. Kathy had it bad.
You held an event at Mulvaney's, I believe, a bon voyage for Kathy.
Correct.
What were some of the moments that still stay with you?
Oh, just the people that showed up, former employees that I was just blown away, people making the drive, friends. I had a friend that didn't even realize they were friends of ours, but we didn't realize that they even knew about it. Because in that moment, you forget, you're trying to contact everybody or get the message out, and this couple walked in and they had driven up from Santa Barbara in the storm. It was a stormy day. And I was just completely blown away. Some of the former chefs that we had in the restaurant, you know, one of them drove up from Fresno. And I just looked at him and I was like, man, thank you very much. And he's like, of course. He goes, you guys gave me a foundation. So just, you know, being touched by how Kathy's touched people. It was, the outpouring was great.
And even now, you're discussing starting a nonprofit as well in her memory called Don't Turn Your Back on Addiction.
We were going to start a nonprofit. We still want to name something, Don't Turn Your Back on Addiction. But I found out through one of Kathy's friends who has been wonderful. She has a love for fashion just like Kathy, and they bonded, and she's also in recovery. She got involved in a program over at UC Davis called the Substance Use Navigator Program that they have at their med center. It's in their emergency room, and they want to put this in every emergency room in California. And it's groundbreaking, and it saved her life. And I tried to get Kathy into that and wasn't successful. But they already have everything in place. They have the infrastructure in place. They have the donation website in place. So we're moving all of our efforts into that. But I still like the name Don't Turn Your Back on Addiction, simply because I came up with that name when I was explaining to a customer what happened. And the lady, she looked at me and she goes, at first we said, you know, it was a long-term illness. And that was in the initial stages. And then she kind of pressed me. She goes, did she have cancer? I said, no, she died from alcoholism. And she literally turned her back. She did not know what to say. It was a shock to her. And right there was my aha moment. I went, okay, we need to put a name on this. So that's where that name came from.
Given that Taylor's Market has been a staple in Sacramento for over 60 years, and you and Kathy have been a part of it for close to 40 years. I mean, you just talked to a customer and opened up about Kathy's passing. I think it just, that's a testament to how you shape and touch lives in the community. In what ways did Kathy leave her mark on Taylor's Market?
Same thing as in my home. Everywhere you look, there's something.
Everywhere.
There's just something that, you know, it's like, okay, we got to set things up a certain way. Even though she was never involved in the meat counter, some of the ways I do things, she's in my head going, no, it's got to be this way. The attention to detail. So she was very detail-oriented. So she wouldn't miss any kind of detail. So it's just the details, just the flowers, just the decorations.
Finally, you know, going back to that customer that you talked to and that really inspired the name that you want to carry in Kathy's honor, Don't Turn Your Back on Addiction, what do you hope Kathy's legacy will be?
Well, I think to be remembered for the worldly woman that she was, from, you know, the woman who grew up in a small town but knew that there was a lot bigger world out there and wanted to explore that world, her sense of fashion, her sense of style, and unfortunately, the cause of death, she can make change with that. You know, people can remember, hey, if it can happen to someone that essentially had everything, it can happen to anyone. You know, she had all the resources. She had everything to fight this. You know, financially, she wasn't without health insurance. There are so many people that don't have health insurance. That's where the UC Davis program helps out. So just a small town girl who became wildly successful, but then succumbed to a insidious disease.
I think that highlights that there's so much that's missing from the conversation collectively.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, people think, and that's the thing, people look at something, especially in the world of social media, and they're like, that's the perfect life. But you start peeling away layers of that onion, and most of the time it's not. And I'm proof of that. People all the time said, man, you guys got it made. And yeah, to a certain extent, we do. But now it's not a we, it's a me. And I would love to go back to the we, but you know, now it's time to turn that page.
Well, Danny, thank you so much for being open and vulnerable, because it really allows us to go past assumptions and to better understand something that touches so many lives.
Yes, it does. And hopefully we can affect some people that they go, hey, man, you know, maybe we can speak out or we can get our loved one some help.
Danny Johnson is the owner and head butcher at Taylor's Market, sharing his wife Kathy's battle with mental health and alcohol addiction to raise awareness and help others. Kathy passed away in February. If you or someone you know is suffering from a mental illness or struggling with addiction, call 988, which is the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. There's also the National Alliance on Mental Health. You can text HELPLINE to 6264. Up next, the deadly 2018 Montecito mudslides killed 23 people in Santa Barbara County. A survivor who lost her husband, son, and family dog in the disaster joins us about writing her debut memoir, Where the Yellow Flowers Bloom, a true story of hope through unimaginable loss. You're listening to a special Best Of edition of Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.